Right now, thousands of founders are utterly convinced they can build the next Airbnb in like a single weekend using AI.
Oh, yeah, completely convinced.
Right. They think the barrier to entry has just, evaporated entirely.
But the newly released data shows a completely different reality.
Very different. Because to build even a simple bare bones application today, you are still looking at a minimum of 4 to 6 weeks.
And a cost of at least $15,000 to $40,000.
Yeah. So today we're looking at why our brains are just so phenomenally bad at estimating software timelines.
And what actually happens when all this hype collides with engineering reality?
Exactly. So to uncover the absolute truth about building a software product in 2026 for you, the listener, we are basing our deep dive today on a highly comprehensive, newly published guide.
Right. It's by the Technigian team. It's titled MVP Development Timeline 2026, How Long It Actually Takes to Go From Idea to Launch.
And how AI is changing the math.
Yes. It's a critical collision to analyze because, well, the landscape of building software has undergone this seismic shift with generative AI.
But human behavioral traps haven't changed at all. Okay, let's unpack this. Because it is incredibly exciting to finally get a realistic, unflinching look under the hood of modern tech development. No sugarcoating.
Not at all.
So to figure out how to navigate and actually accelerate development for you, whether you're, a venture-backed founder or just someone with a million-dollar app idea scribbled on a napkin, we first have to establish the real-world baseline.
Right.
We talk a lot about the MVP, the minimum viable product. How long does a standard build actually take right now, according to the hard numbers?
Well, the source data completely shatters that whole myth of the overnight launch.
Good, let's hear it.
The authors segment timelines strictly by product complexity. So if you are building a simple MVP,
Meaning like what?
like data capture tools or
Yeah.
single-purpose web apps with maybe 3 to 5 core features, the baseline for that is 4 to 6 weeks, costing roughly $15,000 to $40,000.
Okay, but I'm looking at the next tier up in the guide, and the jump is significant.
Oh, it really is.
Like if you move into a standard SaaS build where you are suddenly dealing with multi-tenant architecture, robust user role management, maybe custom
It's just
dashboarding.
few third-party API integrations, yeah.
Right. The timeline suddenly stretches to 6 to 8 weeks, and the capital requirement doubles. You're moving to the $40,000 to $80,000 range.
And that upward trajectory just accelerates exponentially depending on your business model. Take a marketplace MVP, for example.
Oh, those are notoriously tough.
Extremely. You are building a two-sided platform, which means you essentially have to build two separate user journeys that seamlessly interact.
Right, buyers and sellers.
Exactly. You need advanced search, secure messaging, transaction escrow, review systems. For that, you're in the 8 to 12 week range.
Then there's the absolute top tier, the complex and enterprise level builds. We are talking fintech handling transactions, healthcare platforms bound by strict compliance, or AI native products running custom models.
For those, you are looking at a minimum of 12 to 20 weeks.
Wow.
And the budget starts at $150,000.
Minimum.
Minimum. And it scales rapidly from there. I mean, regulatory frameworks alone dictate a massive portion of that timeline.
So if a founder is, say, sketching out a fully compliant healthcare marketplace on a napkin right now, thinking they can launch in a month for 10 grand because they bought a Copilot subscription.
They are driving straight off a cliff.
Exactly. But the source points out something really crucial here regarding the timeline. The biggest bottleneck founders hit isn't actually that their engineers are typing code too slowly.
No, not at all.
The absolute number one timeline killer is scope creep.
Scope creep has always been the silent assassin of software timelines. But the guide provides this surprisingly rigid heuristic to diagnose it early.
Yeah, it draws a very hard line in the sand.
It does.
It states that if your feature list has more than 5 to 7 items, you are fundamentally no longer building an MVP. You have crossed over into building version 1.0.
Which is a distinction a lot of product managers totally fail to make. The data shows that every single additional feature you tack onto that initial list isn't just a marginal increase.
Right.
It adds 1 to 2 full weeks to your timeline
Wow.
because of how features interact and, complicate the existing architecture.
Building an MVP seems to be like packing a suitcase for a weekend trip.
Okay, I like that.
Like you logically know you only need 3 outfits, but then the anxiety sets in.
Right, the what ifs.
Exactly. You think, well, what if the client wants to go to a formal dinner? What if it rains and we go hiking? I should pack boots.
Naturally.
Suddenly, founders are throwing in 15 just-in-case features, and they end up dragging this massive heavy trunk through the airport for a 48-hour trip, exhausting all their resources before they even reach the destination.
That analogy perfectly isolates the psychological trap. You are over-engineering for edge cases that haven't even materialized yet.
Yes.
And paying the freight cost, both in time and capital, for completely hypothetical scenarios.
But let me push back on the guide's premise here for a second.
Sure.
If we strictly cap the build at 3 to 5 features, won't users think the app is too basic to actually pay for? I mean, why would an enterprise client pay for a SaaS product that only does 3 things when incumbents are offering 50 features?
What's fascinating here is that this specific anxiety stems from a fundamental misunderstanding of what the MVP is actually designed to do.
Okay, how so?
Its purpose is not to achieve feature parity with an incumbent who has been iterating in the market for 5 years.
Right.
The singular goal is to validate one core hypothesis.
Validate the hypothesis, not win the feature war.
Precisely. You're trying to answer one question. Does this specific mechanism solve a workflow problem so painful that a targeted group of users will tolerate a bare-bones interface to use it?
Ah, I see.
If the problem is bleeding neck enough, they will forgive the lack of dark mode or, you know, native integrations. Mm. But here is the critical operational mechanism.
Yeah.
Every extra feature beyond that core hypothesis doesn't just inflate the timeline. It actively corrupts your data.
Wait, how does it corrupt the data?
Well, if you launch with 15 features and user engagement is high, you have no idea which feature is actually driving retention.
Oh, wow. Yeah?
Is it the core workflow or is it that shiny secondary widget you tacked on? You've diluted the learning process. You haven't validated the core business model. You've just built a sprawling app.
So ruthless prioritization is the only defense mechanism to protect the timeline and the integrity of the data.
Absolutely.
But that brings us to the elephant in the room for 2026.
The AI question.
Great. If the core problem is that building all these features takes too long, why couldn't we just deploy generative AI to build that bloated scope in half the time?
Right.
Because we are constantly bombarded with narratives about AI completely revolutionizing the development lifecycle.
And it is revolutionizing the lifecycle. But we have to completely separate Twitter hype from the reality of deploying production-grade, scalable software.
Okay.
The source data confirms that AI coding tools like Cursor and GitHub Copilot are fundamentally altering the economics of the build phase. Engineering teams are reporting 40 to 60% faster prototyping.
40 to 60% faster is an incredible metric. That sounds like a structural shortcut to bypassing the timeline problem entirely.
It sounds like it, yeah. Until you look at the specific mechanisms of where that acceleration is actually happening.
Okay, so where is it happening?
The impact is highly asymmetrical. AI accelerates specific execution phases dramatically while completely failing at others.
The guide is very granular about this, actually. It states AI specifically accelerates what it calls mechanical coding.
Yes.
It's like it crushes boilerplate generation. It handles CRUD operations instantly, generating 80 to 90% of test coverage.
Exactly. It writes unit tests and edge cases in a fraction of the time a human engineer would take.
Mm.
It also automates the historical bane of every developer's existence.
Documentation.
Documentation. Yeah. Generating API docs, inline code comments, technical readmes directly from the code base. It eliminates weeks of tedious post-development labor.
Yeah.
In these mechanical phases, AI genuinely saves engineering teams 25 to 40% of their time.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Yeah.
Let me push back. So wait, if AI can write code in seconds and write 80 to 90% of the test coverage and document its own code,
right?
Why can't I just prompt it to build my entire custom healthcare platform from scratch?
That is a very, very common misconception. Generating tests for a flawed architecture doesn't fix the architecture.
Okay.
It just verifies that the flawed system behaves exactly as the AI intended. It's a false sense of security.
I see. It's testing the symptoms, not the root cause.
Exactly. When you ask an AI to just build a platform, it relies on probability to make thousands of micro decisions to get you to a functional state as fast as possible.
Right.
But AI has zero forward-thinking business context.
Mm-hmm.
It does not know that your specific go-to-market strategy requires scaling from 10 enterprise users to 10,000 in 6 months.
It's like asking an AI to build a two-story house.
Yeah.
It builds the walls in record time, and it looks beautiful. But because it didn't know you eventually wanted to add a third floor, it didn't bother putting in load-bearing beams on the ground floor.
Exactly.
It just used drywall. So when you try to scale up, the entire structure collapses under its own weight.
That is the exact mechanism of technical debt. An unsupervised AI might choose a non-relational database structure when your future feature roadmap absolutely requires complex SQL joins.
Oh, man.
Right. Or it might implement a lightweight authentication protocol that completely violates the security requirements of your target enterprise clients.
Which is a nightmare.
It might look like a working app today, but the moment you try to scale or pivot, you have to tear the foundation down to the studs and rebuild it.
And the guide explicitly lists the high-level tasks AI currently cannot execute.
Yeah.
It cannot conduct user discovery. It cannot map out UX and UI design strategy because anticipating the nuances of human workflow friction requires human empathy.
Exactly.
And it absolutely cannot handle regulatory compliance.
Compliance is a massive blind spot for AI. Frameworks like HIPAA for healthcare or SOC2 for enterprise data security aren't just about code.
Right, they're organizational.
They're about organizational processes, liability, verifiable audit trails.
Mm.
Navigating those requirements can add 30 to 100% to any timeline, and AI cannot assume legal liability for federal privacy law compliance.
So when you actually do the math, if AI speeds up mechanical coding by 50%, but mechanical coding is only half the battle, and you still need human oversight for discovery, architecture, design, and compliance, the guide calculates that the net reduction in the total project timeline is only about 15 to 25%.
Which is still a highly valuable efficiency gain. Shaving a week and a half off a standard six-week sprint is fantastic for your burn rate.
True.
But it exposes the fallacy that AI is a magic bullet capable of condensing a six-month enterprise build into a weekend hackathon.
Which means, if AI is just a powerful tool and not a replacement for strategy, the real reasons products fail to launch on time are purely behavioral.
Absolutely.
And the source outlines five specific mistakes founders make that completely blow up these timelines. Let's look at how these failures actually happen in practice.
The behavioral psychology here is fascinating.
Right. So mistake one is building too many features, which we covered.
Scope creep, yes.
Mistake two seems incredibly destructive, skipping discovery.
Oh, it's brutal.
The data shows founders who jump straight into coding waste an average of 6 to 9 months building unwanted features. And they do this simply because they skipped a 1 to 2 week discovery sprint. How does skipping a 5-day planning phase cost you 9 months?
They come down to compounding architectural errors.
Yeah.
If you don't map the user journey and validate the problem, you make massive assumptions about the domain model.
Okay.
You spend 3 months building a complex, real-time messaging architecture only to launch and discover your users actually just wanted a simple daily email digest.
Oh, that hurts. Right.
You have to scrap the messaging system, rewrite the database schema, and build the email engine. It is the classic ready, fire, aim approach.
Then there is mistake three, choosing the wrong build approach.
Yes.
Specifically, knowing when to leverage no-code platforms versus when to invest in custom development.
This is a critical architectural crossroad. No-code platforms are incredible for validating demand with a very low capital expenditure. Assuming your core hypothesis doesn't require highly specialized logic.
Right. But the trap is forcing a complex application into a rigid no-code constraint. Like if you need a proprietary algorithm and you try to hack it together using a no-code workaround, you hit a performance wall instantly.
Immediately.
You end up having to do a total custom rebuild within 6 months anyway, meaning you paid for the app twice.
Conversely, dropping $80,000 on custom development when a simple no-code tool could have answered your core hypothesis is a massive misallocation of early stage capital.
Yeah, you have to match the infrastructure to the complexity.
Exactly.
Mistake four is treating the MVP as the final product.
Yes.
The guide quotes LinkedIn founder Reid Hoffman here. If you are not embarrassed by the first version of your product, you've launched too late.
It is incredibly difficult for highly driven people to release something they view as substandard.
People seem to treat their MVP like their wedding day.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
They obsess over every perfect detail, the exact pixel padding on the buttons, ensuring the entire system is flawless before they let a single user see it. When really, it should be treated like an awkward first date just to see if there's a connection.
Exactly.
You are just meeting for a quick coffee. If the market doesn't care about your core hypothesis, you want to find that out after spending $10,000, not after spending $100,000 on a flawless, heavily catered wedding.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, This perfectionism destroys your feedback loop.
How so?
If you polish every edge case before launching, you lose the primary advantage of the MVP model, which is speed to insight. Which brings us to mistake 5.
Not planning for post-launch learning.
Right. The guide explicitly states that launching the product is only 40% of the work.
Wow, only 40%.
Yes. 60% of the effort is measuring user behavior, analyzing the data, and iterating the code base based on reality.
So an MVP is not a manufacturing process where a finished product just rolls off an assembly line.
No, not at all.
It is fundamentally an instrument designed to capture data.
Exactly. Which is why skipping discovery is fatal, and why building analytics into the MVP isn't a luxury. It is a mandatory architectural requirement. You are building a learning engine.
Okay, so we know what destroys a timeline. Overpacking the feature suitcase, letting AI make architectural decisions without context, skipping discovery, and treating the launch like a wedding.
Right.
Now that you, the listener, know what not to do, how does a modern agency actually execute a 4 to 6 week timeline successfully?
This is the important part.
The source provides the literal blueprint for this. It's Technigian's hybrid advantage process.
This is where we transition from theory into practical execution. It is a highly rigid, synchronized process that directly neutralizes all the behavioral traps we just analyzed.
It all hinges on how they handle the first 5 days. Week one is a paid discovery sprint.
Yes.
In 1 week, they define the domain model, map the precise user journey, and output an open API contract specification, which allows them to offer a fixed price. What exactly is an open API contract?
The open API contract is the absolute linchpin of modern high-speed development. Think of it as an ironclad programmatic peace treaty.
Between who?
Between the front-end developers building the interface and the back-end developers building the server logic. It explicitly defines exactly how data will be formatted, requested, and delivered.
Because usually without that contract, the front-end team builds a screen expecting user data to be formatted one way.
Right.
And the back-end team builds a database that spits it out completely differently.
And then they spend 3 weeks arguing and rewriting code
yeah.
to make the two sides talk to each other.
Exactly.
The integration phase is where timelines historically go to die. By finalizing the open API contract in week one, they completely eliminate ambiguity. The interface and the database are guaranteed to connect perfectly.
Which unlocks weeks 2 and 3, the AI accelerated parallel build.
Yes.
Because the rules of engagement are locked in, the front-end and back-end engineers can code completely blind to each other simultaneously. This is where they deploy AI to handle that mechanical CR due day generation we talked about. But the human architect is the one writing the prompts and enforcing the open API contract.
The human architect is defining the load-bearing beams. The AI is rapidly installing the drywall exactly where it was told to.
That brings us to week 4, integration and testing. Because of the contract, the front-end and back-end snap together like Legos, AI generates the massive volume of unit tests.
Yes.
And then weeks 5 and 6 are dedicated strictly to launch, analytics, and post-launch iteration support.
Notice how a third of their entire timeline is dedicated solely to post-launch data gathering.
Yeah, that's huge.
They are operationalizing the concept that the launch is only the beginning of the process.
So what does this all mean? Let me ask you this. Looking at the specific technology stack they mandate.
Sure.
The guide notes Technigian uses highly scalable enterprise-grade infrastructure, specifically .NET 8 and React with TypeScript, deployed on Azure or AWS.
Right.
If an MVP is supposed to be a fast, lean learning tool, isn't using enterprise-grade infrastructure like .NET 8 total overkill for a 6-week build?
It seems like a contradiction.
Yeah.
Definitely. Until you factor in the ultimate financial objective of most founders in this position.
Which is institutional fundraising.
Exactly. The guide highlights a vital metric. Startups equipped with a functional MVP and early user data are 3 times more likely to secure pre-seed funding.
Right. VCs want traction.
They want traction, but they also conduct technical due diligence. Venture capitalists strongly prefer to invest in a technological foundation that won't require a total rewrite the moment you achieve product market fit.
Ah, I see. Because if you build your MVP on a fragile framework just to save 2 weeks, and you suddenly hit a viral loop and gain 10,000 users,
your database locks up and the app crashes.
Right, and then you have to walk into a board meeting and tell your investors, thank you for the capital, but we have to pause all development for 6 months till you completely rewrite the platform.
Investors actively penalize startups for that exact scenario. What Technigian does is strategically thread the needle. By combining a ruthlessly narrow scope of features with an enterprise-grade stack like .NET 8, you get the speed of an MVP build without sacrificing structural integrity.
That is brilliant.
You can confidently scale from 10 users to 10,000 without throwing away the code base. It fundamentally makes this startup more fundable.
Okay, we have covered a massive amount of ground here. Let's summarize the main takeaways for you, the listener, right now.
Sounds good.
First, protect your timeline by fiercely guarding your scope. Limit yourself to 5 to 7 core features. Keep the suitcase light.
Yes.
Second, respect the process. Do your discovery work.
Do not skip it.
Third, remember that AI is an incredible power tool, but you still need a human architect holding the blueprints.
Absolutely.
And whether you are sketching ideas in Santa Monica or planning an enterprise pivot, protecting your timeline means fiercely protecting your project's scope.
You know, reviewing all this data about the speed of AI and the emphasis on post-launch iteration.
Yeah.
This leaves us with a really fascinating, slightly uncomfortable thought.
What's that?
If the actual launch is only 40% of the work, and the remaining 60% is iterating based on data, does the traditional concept of a launch date even exist anymore?
Oh, wow.
Or should we start viewing software development as an endless ongoing conversation with our users?
That is definitely something to mull over. Until next time.